Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of WN Movie Talk Podcast. This week we are here to discuss the 1977 car crash road movie Grand Theft Auto. In the first of a series of episodes in which I look at established directors from today at their directorial debuts. And today is child star turned prolific Hollywood director Ron Howard. This directorial debut is going to be a new series of the show. I'm going to sort of keep popping in and out, looking at different directors and looking at their directorial debuts. I thought Ron Howard would be a good place to start because I've had Grand Theft Auto on my shelf for over a year and haven't got to watch it yet. And I thought, well, why not start with him and a film that I haven't seen? So we'll come back and have a look at that a bit later on. But first of all, let's have a look at some of the headlines from the past week in the movie news. So this week, actor Aaron Taylor-Johnson has been announced as the new James Bond. Hopefully he will tidy himself up a little bit. So the photos of him going around, scraggly hair, unshaven, you know, unkempt beard. Come on, James Bond is no hippie. That's why George Lazenby lost the gig. And yeah, not a bad choice. Former Bond star Pierce Brosnan has given him the okay after they starred together in a 2009 movie, The Greatest, playing a father and son duo together. But yeah, it was a time where there was all sorts of speculations going around at what direction they was going to take Bond into. And rather than Aaron Taylor-Johnson at one point, I thought we might even have Anya Taylor-Joy playing James Bond. Or Jane Bond. But there we go. They're keeping it going. I haven't had a lot of experience with Aaron Taylor-Johnson, I don't think. But so it'd be interesting to see someone who's relatively unknown to me playing the character, starting from scratch. Also in the news this week, actor Louis Gossett Jr. passed away, aged 87. He was the first black actor to win the Supporting Actor Oscar for his role as Sergeant Lee Ermey. Emil Foley, in An Officer and a Gentleman. I joke, of course. Lee Ermey was the drill sergeant in Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, and he was also the one who coached Louis Gossett Jr. in An Officer and a Gentleman. And if you haven't seen An Officer and a Gentleman or Full Metal Jacket, a lot of the dialogue is lifted from one another because that Lee Ermey, who plays the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket, he was a real life drill sergeant, and these are all his lines that he used to use. So he gave them to Louis Gossett Jr. for An Officer and a Gentleman, and then went on to use them himself in Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket years later. Other memorable roles from Louis Gossett Jr. include Iron Eagle, Roots, Enemy Mine opposite Dennis Quaid, but if you're of my generation, then you'll probably know him best as angry water park owner Calvin Bouchard from Jaws 3. Although his final acting role was in the 2024 adaptation of Alice Walker's novel, The Colour Purple. So, you know, acting right up until the end. So, condolences to Gossett Jr.'s family. In the box office this week, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire opens to the lowest Rotten Tomato score of any Ghostbusters film to date, with critics from test screenings leading the way and tearing it a new arsehole. Although at $45 million, dollar opening weekend takes the franchise over the $1 billion threshold. And I'm sure Easter weekend will see those box office returns sort of creeping up. I know a lot of kids, a lot of families probably go and watch it, but I don't know. I am not bothered. I don't know, the trailer looked all right, but since I've read the reviews, and it sounds like it's a bit of a mess. Too many characters, too much nostalgia, too much trying to shoehorn in things that we love from the older films, which to me isn't original and it doesn't help a film. You know, the last one I thought done a bit too much of that for me. I didn't really enjoy it as much. My family and that did, so, you know, we might still go and watch it. The kids, my son still wants to watch it. Godzilla vs. Kong, The New Empire, smashes its way into the box office with estimated returns of over $50 million in its opening weekend. So, I've not seen any of the Godzilla films. Godzilla, King Kong, to me, I can't get into those things, but I know that this is the sequel to a Godzilla Kong film that done really, really well, didn't it? Isn't it the highest in, like, IMDb and what have you, Rotten Tomatoes? We will have to see, anyway. So, yeah, that was movie news, something I thought I'd throw into the mix each week, and we can sort of get an idea of what was going on in the world. Even when you find this podcast years down the line, you go, oh, I wonder when this was made. And then you'll have some sort of context. That's what I was thinking. And filler, really, because I feel like I need a bit of filler, just chatting away on my own. Anyway, enough moaning. Over on the old Facebook, because we're talking about Ron Howard this week, his directorial debut, Grand Theft Auto. I asked the question, who are your favourite actors turned directors, over on Facebook at facebook.com/WN Movie Talk Podcast. Get over there now, find us, and you can join in the chat in future weeks. If you are new to this podcast as well, don't forget to like and subscribe and comment wherever you can. Give us a rating on whatever podcast platforms you're listening on. Actually, if you have several under your belt, go over and just give us a 5-star rating. That would be brilliant. Always helps us to get out to new audiences. Anyway, I won't keep banging on about stuff like that. So I said, who are your favourite actors turned directors and which of their films do you consider the best in their filmography? Nathan Kent said, I'm looking forward to seeing what Dev Patel does with Monkey Man. Kenneth Branagh has done some solid films. His best is Belfast. Yeah, I saw the trailer for that Dev Patel Monkey Man the other week when I went to watch Saving Private Ryan, as I mentioned last week. He's doing what I call doing a Stallone. Starring, produced by, directed by, written by Dev Patel. But, you know, good on him, making his own vehicle. It does look a bit too sort of high-octane action-y for me. I can't get into that sort of fighting action nonsense. But it does look good. I do like Dev Patel. I really enjoyed him in David Copperfield the other year. Actually, my favourite adaptation of any Dickens book. And that's actually one of my favourite Dickens books anyway. From director Amanda Annucci. Again, it hasn't done very well over on IMDb and that, but I really enjoyed the film. I thought there was some great casting in it. Maybe the colourblind casting rubs some people up the wrong way, but I think, you know, it's just a good bit of fun. Gives everyone an opportunity to play some of these classic roles. And they all done it really well. I did really enjoy it. It was quite an interesting look on it. Who else did we have? Chris Benton said the actor and director in A Quiet Place. Yep, John Krasinski. Chris, great. They were great films. I did really enjoy those. I need to watch the second one again. Haven't watched it since I watched them both at the cinema, back to back. And I don't know, has John Krasinski done anything else? I've not really looked into it. And Rob Jones says Ben Affleck, The Town. I haven't seen The Town, Rob, but I really did enjoy Argo. So Ben Affleck, good choice there. Another actor turned director, I guess, is Mel Gibson. You know, he always tries to make movies that are, the themes are sort of grown up and the subject matter. But when you watch a Mel Gibson film, they're always quite schlocky. They're a bit far-fetched, a bit too over the top. My brother and myself have discussed on the channel Hacksaw Ridge. So if you want to have a look back at that, that one's maybe worth having a look at to see what I mean about Mel Gibson, really. Yeah, he doesn't quite pull it off as far as I'm concerned. I mean, his films have all been successful, but yeah, Hacksaw Ridge. I haven't seen The Passion of the Christ. I mean, that was a brave move, but God only knows what that's like without watching it. The first choice that came to my mind would have been Clint Eastwood. I mean, his career is prolific now as a director as well, isn't it? He's done a Ron Howard. I think his films, perhaps, there's a bit more meat and sustenance than there is in a Ron Howard film. I don't know what it is. It's something. Clint Eastwood's certainly a great director. But we're not here to talk about Clint Eastwood. We are here to talk about Ron Howard. And as I said, this series, I'm going to be looking at directorial debuts of directors. So I'm going to basically be looking at their first film within the body of the movies that they've made. And we will have to see if this debut movie holds any traits or motifs or styles that we can recognise through the rest of their films. Now, I was looking up, doing a bit of research on this, and there was a big debate over on Reddit of whether Ron Howard is actually an auteur, whether he has his own style. And a lot of people saying, well, he's just a just a puppet for the studios, and he does work well within the studio system. He probably is one of those people who's so easygoing that he doesn't want to rock the boat. But that being said, he has made some cracking films and some prolific movies. And although, yeah, you maybe you would put a Ron Howard film on and not recognise it as a Ron Howard film until you saw his name pop up in the credits, there are always some sort of signs that it is a director. There's something, you know, in the content perhaps that he strayed towards, or characters, or, you know. So there is things that we can look at and discuss through here. I know that, he does work within the studio system. He is one of those rare directors who loves to test his films in front of a live audience to help tweak it and delete bits or rewrite, you know, reshoot. A lot of directors sort of hate any sort of interference with their work. But Ron Howard's, he's a easiest going guy in Hollywood, perhaps. So, you know, Ron Howard, very varied career. He's done films of a serious and dramatic nature, such as Apollo 13 and A Beautiful Mind. He's done more light-hearted, fantastic films, such as Splash, Cocoon, Willow, Grinch. He stepped in to help recover Solo, a Star Wars story. He's done movies such as Ransom, Parenthood, The Da Vinci Code films, Frost Nixon, Rush, 13 Lives. Absolutely an endless amount of movies that this bloke is churning out. Since he started, he's never really stopped. He's had collaborations with actors such as Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton and Russell Crowe, and writers such as Lowell Gans and Babalu Mandel, who were the writers for Happy Days, who he brought on board when they was writing Night Shift, which was his first film collaboration with producer Brian Grazer, who they would later on go on to create Imagine Entertainment, which they formed in 1986. So some of my favourites from his filmography. Splash was always a favourite as a child. I haven't watched it in many years. Cocoon I rewatched recently. Thoroughly enjoyed that. A Beautiful Mind. I think that was the first film he won the Best Director at Oscar for. That was really good. Apollo 13. Proper gripping on the edge of your seat stuff. Frost Nixon. Ransom was a good one. An underrated classic. I think it's EdTV and it... I listened to another podcast and they recently done something similar here with Night Shift. They looked at Night Shift and then went through Ron Howard's filmography, and they gave EdTV, one of them hadn't seen it, one of them sort of dismissed it as being a sort of a copycat version of Truman Show. But to me, I think that they're completely different films. You can't compare the two. I know they got compared. They was released around similar times. But that's only, to me, that's evidence of the zeitgeist of the time. You know, what's going on in the world at the time. We was on the edge of reality TV, and it's actually EdTV is a remake of a French film, so it's not completely, you know, it's not copying at all. I used to really, really liked EdTV when I was a little bit younger. That being said, I haven't watched it recently. It was the first film I remember seeing Matthew McConaughey in. That's how long ago it was that I watched that. But yeah, I haven't watched it again recently, so I can't really say if it is as good as I remember, but I wouldn't mind watching it again. Me and Nath almost did watch that when we done The Truman Show back along, but we ultimately just did The Truman Show on its own, which I think is good. They shouldn't be compared. They're not from the same source material. But to me, EdTV, you know, it was a good precursor of sort of the YouTube generation that's turned up, you know, people filming every aspect of their lives, throwing themselves headfirst into, you know, the limelight. I thought it was quite a good film myself. But anyway, Grand Theft Auto, the movie. If there's any keen gamers out there, don't go getting your hopes up. It's not what you think. This is the very first film of a director who by now has become an established director in Hollywood, Ron Howard. A former child star made famous in America with shows like The Andy Griffith Show, and across the UK, we knew him best as Richie Cunningham from Happy Days. And it is none other than Ron Howard. Now, Ron Howard has had a really varied career. Not only was he a child star, he's allegedly one of the nicest guys in Hollywood. He's a very family orientated man, and that's how he got into the business, really. From a very early age, his parents, Rance and Jean Howard, they were both actors, and they instilled in him a love for storytelling and performance. And from the outset, they would often take them onto film sets or TV studios, wherever they were working and getting work. They both said when they had a child that they wasn't going to let it change them. So they just sort of lived this life, and they always had their child, you know, Ron, and later on his brother Clint, there with them. Now, both Ron and Clint found fame in various things. Clint, one of his earliest appearances was in an old Star Trek episode. But I remember Clint mainly, not mainly, but I do remember him from when we was kids, and they used to repeat Gentle Ben. And he was the young boy in Gentle Ben. Ron Howard, as I said, his first performance was at the tender age of 2 years old. He was in a series of commercials before making his film debut in 1956 in a film called Frontier Woman. Before he became a director, though, he was also starred alongside Richard Dreyfuss in George Lucas's American Graffiti, which is a really great film. I'll have to sort of have a look at that one at some point as well, for sure. But Howard comments on how American Graffiti was the first time he went onto a film set where it was mainly young guys and women too working as crew members. Before that, he'd always been on, you know, the old Hollywood, and it was all stuffy old men in suits and what have you, sort of calling the shots. I mean, it was a breath of fresh air to see how George Lucas was creating this film. And George Lucas also created an environment that allowed the actors to ad-lib and just roll with the story and sort of let the story play out. Rather than sort of having all these different setups, he would just film it almost documentary style. And I think that experience had a lasting effect on Howard in his own career. But yeah, he was cast into the limelight, very professional, even as a child actor. A lot of sort of actors who worked alongside him commented on how he was just, you know, unlike any other child actor. He was a good guy. He was amiable, he was responsible, he wasn't a tearaway on set, just a dream to work with by all accounts, which is why, you know, obviously why he constantly found work. I think he had more work than his parents in the end, but that never deterred him, it never went to his head, which is a good thing. And even during the lull, before Happy Days became a thing and he was starting to not get as much work, he didn't sort of spiral out of control into drink and drugs and what have you. I think his brother Clint had more issues with that sort of thing when he was growing up. But Ron was very sort of straight-laced and set in his ways. But one of the things he did want from a very early age was a film-making career. So despite his success as a child actor, he always harboured these ambitions beyond the spotlight. Having sort of been raised on film sets, he was fascinated by the intricacies of film making and began to hone his skills behind the camera, directing short films in which his father and his brother would often star. And that early foray into directing sparked a passion that would ultimately shape the trajectory of his career. His first film, Grand Theft Auto, which we will get onto in a bit, was produced via Roger Corman, King of the B-Movies, and his company New World Cinema. Now, Corman played a pivotal role in shaping the landscape of Hollywood cinema as we know it today, really. Because, you know, particularly in the realms of independent and genre filmmaking back in the 1970s, Corman provided a platform for many aspiring filmmakers to sort of cut their teeth and hone their craft, often on a shoestring budget and very tight schedules. Through his production company, Corman gave opportunities to countless directors, such as Martin Scorsese, James Cameron, Francis Ford Coppola, Peter Bogdanovich. See, they all got their start working for Corman, knocking out trashy B-movies under his tutelage. These directors learned the ropes of filmmaking under his mentorship, gained invaluable experience in every aspect of production, from writing and directing to editing and marketing. Corman understood the importance of delivering entertaining films on a tight budget. It's the sort of, you know, trashy movies, like, you know, all about bikers and sort of horror movies, car chases, things like that, that, you know, would bring in the teenage crowds at at the drive-in cinemas. So he'd often employ creative solutions to overcome sort of the financial constraints. And this mentality fostered a spirit of innovation and resourcefulness among many of his protégés, many of whom would carry those lessons learnt throughout them with their careers. Back in 1976, Roger Corman actually approached Ron Howard to star in another of his B-movies called Eat My Dust, and it was about a boy who steals a stock car and then goes on a joyride with his girlfriend. So Howard said he would be in it under the condition that he could direct his own movie for Corman. Now, Howard at this point had been wanting to direct, and he'd been sort of going around to different studios asking to direct, and none of them were really willing to take a risk on that kid from Happy Days. So he was getting rejected left, right and centre. Corman, of course, said to him, yeah, that's fine. So Ron Howard gave him some scripts that, or approached him with some synopsis for scripts that Ron and his father, Rance, had been working on, none of which really fell into the Corman sort of sex and violence style. So he was getting rejected, even from Roger Corman. But eventually Corman said, look, how about making a film under the title Grand Theft Auto? So Ron and his dad dug out an old script that they had, which Rance had written, and they took it apart and rewrote it for Roger Corman. Corman read it and was like, yep, that's it, let's do it. And so he gave Ron Howard the green light to direct his first movie. Ron Howard at the time was 23 years old. Actually, filming commenced one day after Howard's 23rd birthday. There was a 22-day shooting schedule, a really short shooting schedule, which was not unusual for Corman. He liked to knock these films out, get them done quickly. You needed to get as many setups done in a day as you could. By the end of day one, Ron Howard had shot 37 setups, which seemed a lot, but it wasn't the record. I think the record was like up in the 80s. And by the end of the film, Ron Howard and his crew had destroyed that record. They'd had completed 91 setups in one day. So he basically had two units filming simultaneously. So now we're going to discuss the film. We'll get into the movie now. It tells the story of two lovers eloping to wed in Vegas, being chased by every man and his dog. And the script proved to be just the ticket for Corman. Lots of zany characters in pursuit of the star-crossed lovers. Ridiculous laughs, but more importantly, plenty of car crashes throughout. All sorts of vehicles being absolutely destroyed. Now, this sort of road movie, car chase film was quite popular at this point. Another film came out this year, this same year, was Smokey and the Bandit. And then films like The Cannibal Run and all that would also turn up and sort of carry on this genre. Now, it's going to sound a bit like I'm reading bits and bobs here because I'm rubbish at writing notes and I end up just writing. So I've sort of written some bits here that as the episode goes on, there will be bits I discuss and bits that I read. So I do apologise, but here's a bit that I wrote that I'm going to read. Howard's directorial debut is a rollicking ride through the world of 1970s B-movie car chase flicks. Set against the backdrop of a wild cross-country chase, Grand Theft Auto follows the escapades of young lovers Sam Freeman, played by Ron Howard himself, and Paula Powers, played by Nancy Morgan, as they defy her wealthy parents, steal her dad's Rolls Royce and race across the country to elope. Along the way, they encounter a motley crew of eccentric characters, including bumbling criminals, money-hungry preachers, determined bounty hunters, and relentless law enforcement officers, all vying to either aid or hinder the lover's journey. From its high-octane pursuits to its witty dialogue and slapstick humour, the film channels the spirit of its predecessors. Howard's direction infuses the proceedings with a sense of youthful exuberance and a keen eye for kinetic action sequences. All edited together by another Corman protégé who went on to do better things, director Joe Dante sat in the editing booth on this one. He'd later go on to make films such as, perhaps most famous films, I suppose, the Gremlins films. He also done Piranha for Corman. The film showcased Howard's knack for blending humour with high-octane action, setting the stage for his future endeavours as a director, and gave his father, Rance, and younger sibling, Clint, both the opportunity to also shine in minor roles in the movie. So the movie starts with young Ron Howard playing Sam Freeman, and his girlfriend Paula Powers approaching Paula's parents. B Bigby Powers is her father, and he's like running for senator or something like that. So Sam and Paula approach the parents. They want to get married, but they don't want to leave Paula's parents out of it. They're not trying to usher them out. They'd rather they knew their intentions. But Paula's father has other ideas. He's got her lined up to marry into a wealthy family, the Hedgeworth family, and he wants her to marry the son, Collins Hedgeworth, whom they refer to as her fiancé. But instantly, as they tell the parents what's going on, they are horrified, and the dad just shouts, "Get out of my mansion! Get off of my estate!" It's typical of Ron Howard, I suppose, to have these teenagers approach the parents, doing everything by the book, you know? Ron Howard was married at a young age to his wife, Cheryl. I think at this point they'd already been married for like 3 years. And very family-orientated man, as I said, Ron Howard. A very close-knit family. Even his daughter now, Bryce Dallas Howard, is acting. She's in the, you might recognise her from the Jurassic World films. Wasn't she in the new Argyle? She was in Spider-Man 3, was the first time I saw her, playing Gwen Stacy, wasn't it? Not Gwen Stacy, Gwen Stacy. That's who she played in Spider-Man 3, creating a lovely little love triangle there for Peter Parker, didn't they? Didn't they? Do you remember that? And she was going out with Eddie Brock, wasn't she? And then he became Venom. Do you remember that? So there was proper love triangles going on there, wasn't there? Yes. But let's get back to the subject in hand, Ron Howard and his directorial debut, Grand Theft Auto, and his family. But his wife Cheryl, actually, the crew was getting a bit disheartened when they were filming because of the how Corman doesn't really feed his guys. You know, they just get like a hamburger every day or something. So Cheryl, they lived nearby. Her grandparents lived nearby, and she took over her grandparents' kitchen. And she, for 11 days, she cooked in the kitchen, feeding 80 members of the cast and crew. As I was saying, anyway, yeah, Ron Howard, a very Ron Howard thing to do is for him to approach the parents and be reasonable throughout this film. He's not an angry teenager. You know, you root for him because he is a nice guy. And his girlfriend, you know, that's why she likes him. Her dad accuses Howard of being a fortune hunter. And she says, "How dare you accuse him of being a fortune hunter? He's an environmental research major." There is some lines in this that did make me laugh throughout. I did quite enjoy it when we first meet Collins Hedgeworth, and he's like all dressed in his riding gear. He's going to go do some horse show, and he's phoned up to see if Paula would like to join him and watch him. And then they inform her that Paula's stolen our Rolls Royce. They've ran off. So then Colin Hedgeworth, he gets his parents' car. He first of all, he gets into a Porsche, which he totals straight away. So you know what you're... you know what you're up against. And anyone's past two black road workers who shout after him, "You've left your lights on." After this Porsche is like completely totaled. And all the way through this film, he's dressed for dressage. You know, he's got the riding crop and the helmet. And it's quite funny. But he goes off chasing after them. And then Collins phones up the local radio station and he tells them of his pursuit, chasing down this Rolls Royce and his kidnapped girlfriend, and puts out a £25,000 reward for anyone who can help bring them down. And then Mrs. Hedgeworth, she hears that her son's in danger, so then she steals a beetle which belongs to one of her manservants. I think it's at like her butler, and it's like a VW beetle that she steals from her butler. And then he says, "Some brothers just stole my wheels. I'm not taking that shit. I'm going to the police." So then he calls the police, and then the police are after the mother. So you can see how it all sort of snowballs from there. But then it's when Collins phones up a radio station and offers a £25,000 reward over the radio that then other people start to show an interest, including two sort of, I don't know if it's a stock car, they've got this little racing car that they're working on. And this is where we first meet Clint Howard, so Ron's brother. Now, Clint Howard is a bit of the comedy relief. I say that, it's comic relief. Every character's comic relief, but he's quite good in this, I guess. But then he's been acting since he was like sperm, so he should be good at acting, shouldn't he? This is the first trait, I think, from a Ron Howard film that we can recognise, is that he always finds characters for his brother to play. You know, not always, but he tries to. And his father turns up in this again as sort of he's the one tasked with sending all the bounty hunters out after the couple, hired by Bigby Powers. Bigby Powers, his character is so sort of egotistical, he's so set in his ways for his own self-gain, that you wonder if he's more concerned about his daughter being swept away or whether he's more concerned about the Rolls-Royce being stolen. And, you know, as he's telling Rance to go and capture them, he's usually more concerned about the car coming back in one piece than his daughter. You know, it is the ultimate status symbol, this old Rolls-Royce. And, you know, Powers, he's trying to make a big impression. I think the idea you get is it's newfound money. They're not a rich family, but they're getting there. And he wants to become governor of the state that they're in. And that's why he wants to marry into that family. And then he'll have a lot more influence and backing, political backing. So, yeah, so that's why he calls his associate Ned Slinker, played by Ron Howard's father, Rance. I hadn't really been aware of Rance Howard until I was watching The Burbs for the first time, as you can find my episode of The Films I Own that I haven't watched yet, where I watch The Burbs. And there's a policeman in that, and I thought, I recognise that bloke. He looks like he could be related to Ron Howard. And then I Googled it, and it was Rance Howard. So that was the first I was aware of Ron Howard's dad. But Joe Dante directed The Burbs again. So as I said, he's the editor here. So family tie, a close friend to Ron Howard. And it was the first film from Imagine Studios, or Imagine Entertainment. So, you know, we'll produce this film, but you have to have my father in it, Joe. All right? That sort of thing. Giving his dad a job again. Anyway, back to the film again. So already, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger, the amount of people that are out there on the road chasing them. So at this point, Colin's stolen another car, he crashes out, and then he ends up in a truck, vehicle number 3. And as he does this, his mum puts out an award for his rescue, because she just wants him home safe. She doesn't want him out chasing. So she phones up the radio station as well, and she puts out an award for $25,000 to bring her son back safely. And then she steals another car. She cuts across the road, causing another car crash where she cuts in front of traffic, and then one car swerves to miss her and just completely takes the roof off of another car. So constantly through this, there is constant smashes and crashes. It's all right if you like that sort of thing, but it does wear very thin, because it's sort of it's relentless from the word go, but there's not a great deal of sort of pacing. Once you're in it, you're in it, and it's just like an hour and 20 minutes, not a long film, but an hour and 20 minutes of constant car chases. But then the mother, she's like, she's a crazy driver, and she ends up crashing straight into a tree next to a preacher who runs up to her and says, "Have you made a commitment to the Lord?" And she says, "Yes, my husband gave at the office." It's like little, silly little lines like that that I did quite appreciate. And as the cop's trying to arrest her, then the preacher goes and steals the cop car. And he, you know, he's caught wind of the £25,000 being offered. And so he takes up the chase as well. So when someone's asking him, "What are you doing? You're stealing the car." $25,000 buys an awful lot of Bibles. So the cop, then he's left with the church bus. On the side of this bus, it says, "Christ is coming, so are we." So he goes to commandeer the vehicle. And then the oldly driver of the bus turns to him and says, "Piss off, pig." And this becomes a running joke that everyone this policeman then talks to, they turn around and just tell him to piss off throughout the film. So these jokes do wear thin, you know. But the policeman in this, he's only trying to do his job. He's the one, he's trying to get control again. Everyone else is adding to the mayhem, and he's trying at least to rein it in. So the radio DJ as well, DJ Curly Q Brown, he's quite a hectic character. He's your typical sort of radio DJ, and he's sort of narrating the action as it goes. Later on, he turns up in a helicopter, so he's watching the action as he's narrating it, but it tends to just sort of draw all the attention to these lovers as they're on the road, and everyone's sort of chasing them and adding to the mix, this bigger line of cars going on. I'm not a car person, so I'm probably the worst person to sort of narrate this episode, because I can't tell you what the cars were, but you, if you're into cars and American vehicles, you'll probably be like, "Oh man, that's a classic. Why has he not mentioned that classic car?" to me, they're all just cars that are just getting destroyed. It's a bit of fun, I guess. But yeah, the news reporter really stirs up a hornet's nest. And then that's another thing that I've noticed from Ron Howard films. The press, the media, there's always some sort of media frenzy. In this, Ron Howard says it's a goddamn cockamamie circus. I love that phrase, cockamamie. It's not one we use over here a lot, but it always makes me laugh when I hear it. But there is this media circus. I mean, Ron Howard, obviously, he's always been the centre of the media attention, having been a young boy, you know, and sometimes his name has been slurred when he got married. Newspaper reporters were trying to make out that his marriage was on the rocks straight away, you know, and here they are all these years later. I think they've been married for over 40 years still, so prove them wrong. But yeah, he must have always been in the limelight, so he's always aware of media intrusion. EdTV is very similar sort of theme to that. You get a lot of, you know, basically him and his family in the end of that film, they're all being hounded constantly by this TV crew until Ed can turn it around to his own advantage. As well, in Ransom, he uses the media, Mel Gibson uses the media to turn it all around on the kidnappers who have his son. Apollo 13 and Splash, there's like big media frenzies as well. You know, once it's doom and gloom in Apollo 13, then all the media pitch out on the lawn waiting for this tragic moment, you know. So something that does occur in a lot of these Howard films, the press and the media, and it certainly showed up here. But yeah, Paula, they've got a car phone and she phones up the press to sort of try and deter them and to get their side of the story across. And Collins hears it on the radio and says, she's under hypnosis. You know, why would she not love me? She sort of says that Collins is a bit of a buffoon and she's trying to get the people to lay off him. But it doesn't really work. It just helps to sort of whip up and escalate the sort of media frenzy. There's some great lines in the film where there's different crashes. And there's one bit where someone crashes through a chicken coop at the side of the road and the farmer there shouts out, goddamn chicken fucker! I love all that profanity. The old-fashioned swearing in movies just used to make me laugh. Not the new stuff. New movies now, they're just too vulgar. I think they go for the coarse sort of sexual swearing all the time. And it's just a lot of vulgar humour in comedies these days that doesn't really do it for me. So this film, at least, I was laughing throughout at certain points, even if it was a little bit sort of long-winded. There's a sequence where there's the three bounty hunters chase the Rolls Royce and he goes off the road and they're driving around in this dust track. And it's a lot of quick editing, a lot of quick shots. Some interesting shots, actually. Ron Howard has, you know, for his first film, he had put a lot of thought into what the shots would be. I think he'd planned it, he'd storyboarded it all. He had a meeting that took like 48 hours, I think, 2 days worth of a meeting to plan the film with all the crew beforehand. So he's put a lot of thought into it. But in this shot, in this sequence, they're all like racing around, crashing, trying to get the Rolls Royce, and he's blowing up dust. And it's really quick editing. A lot of this is really good, looks really good. But then what I can't stand in all these films is where they speed up the footage and it obviously looks speeded up. And shots like that sort of always let this sort of film down. But anyway, it ends with, you see the Rolls Royce leaving this dust cloud. And as the dust cloud settles, you see these three cars and they're all just smashed, mangled together. It's at this point I was sort of thinking about other directors who've made their first debut movies. Although Spielberg's first film was Jewel, it was actually a TV movie. It wasn't his first cinematic release, even though it did get a cinematic release across Europe. They went back and they added an extra 20 minutes. So it was his first theatrical picture, but not his first theatrical assignment. His first theatrical assignment was The Sugarland Express, which also tells of two lovers on the run being pursued by hundreds of cars. Starred Goldie Hawn and John Atherton. It's something Atherton. I've got a feeling it's John. He's basically Peck out of Ghostbusters. And the reporter, the bullshy reporter out of the Die Hard films as well. You recognise him. Usually plays a good bastard. In this, he's a really sort of sympathetic character. And Terrence Malick, who would later go on to do Days of Heaven and The Thin Red Line, a really good one, and The Tree of Life. His first film was Badlands, starring Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen. as two lovers on the run again. So very coincidental that all these directors make their first film about lovers on the run. Anyway, I've gone off topic again. There's some great stunts in this film, and there's one stunt in particular where the helicopters keep coming down to block the car off, to block the road of the Rolls Royce, and they're just playing chicken with a helicopter, basically. And then at the very last minute, the helicopter lifts, and they do that a couple of times. So, you know, not afraid to take risks with stunts. Exactly the sort of fodder that I'd imagine Corman loves to push into these B-movie films. I talk about Corman, but I've not actually watched a lot of Corman's films. I have actually seen Peter Bogdanovich. I don't know if it's his first film, but it's a film called Targets. That was a really good film. I think it might be his debut. Apart from that, I've watched the original Little Shop of Horrors, but not watched a lot of other Corman films, if I'm honest. Anyway, the radio DJ now, by this point, he's in the helicopter as well. And he's, as I say, he's more of a hindrance than a help. He's sort of stirring up this narrative, backing the lovers, but also encouraging this chase. They meet some dynamite slinging yokels, which also starts notching up the stunts in the movie as they're sort of throwing dynamite into the back of cars. And then the next stunt, you'll see a car leaping over other cars and exploding in midair, you know, so they really are ramping up the stunts as the movie goes on. And there's a really nice shot actually of Rance Howard leaping from a moving vehicle, and he opens a side door of this van, and then you see him just sort of pose. It's all done in one shot, so there's no camera trickery. They're moving along a road. They're probably not moving as fast as it looks, but you see him sort of brace himself and then jump off, run, and then face plant the dust. Yeah, some great little stunt for his dad to pull. I mean, it's unusual, isn't it, for father and son teams, you know what I mean? But Ron Howard, his career overtook his father's as a child, but they're that close, tight-knit family that he relied on his father to help to adapt the screenplay, and he's always wanted to offer them roles in films and stuff. So, you know, as the film goes on, the news crew have also sort of joined in the chase. So you got the radio lot on the air, but you've got the news crew now filming the chase. And then accidentally, the couple enter a demolition derby in the Rolls Royce for the massive finale. It's basically a fucking massive free-for-all with all these cars just trying to attack the Rolls Royce, which is exactly what happens. You know, it's more crashing. It's about 10 minutes in this sequence, I guess. And then they abandon the car, and you just see every single car in that arena just piling in and destroying this Rolls Royce. So, you know, they really are just taking these classic cars and just completely demolishing them for entertainment value, which is a bit heartbreaking, really, I guess. But, you know, I'm not precious about cars, and the Americans love blowing things up, don't they, and destroying things. So this was exactly the sort of the stuff of dreams, I guess, for a lot of American audiences back then, especially the younger ones. Now, one of my favourite car chases in a film is in Blues Brothers. There's some great car chases throughout that, but the film has a lot else going on. So it comes to the car chases, they're set pieces, whereas this is, like I say, it's just car chase after car chase after car chase. They're really well done, they're really well handled, all these stunts, but it is... relentless. The fact that it goes on so long just doesn't help at all, really. You know, it doesn't keep you entertained as much as sort of it was a turn off. It got a bit boring. But the film ends with basically the kids, now they're heroes, and the whole audience are just cheering for them, and they escape, and they do reach the wedding venue, and they get married, and it's a happy ending. So basically every single person who's turned up in this film is all getting arrested at the end outside this demolition derby. There's a big crowd. People are getting arrested left, right and centre. The couple escape. But you see Collins Hedgeworth and his mum meet up, and she's like, "Booby!" And it's really sickly how she sort of adores him. And she's comforting him and basically says, "Don't you worry about that girl. She comes from a trashy family." And then Paula's parents overhear that, and then he says, "Oh yeah, and you've got a fat ass or something." And then they start getting into a fight, and he basically just knocks Collins out. Paula's dad knocks Collins out, and then says, "Oh, that bloke's a bit of a dick anyway. Our daughter's probably better off without him. She's probably better off with the other guy. So, nice Ron Howard happy ending. He gets the girl, he gets the parents on side, all's good. So, yeah, they get married. The chaplain at the wedding, he basically gets them to say their vows and then says, and can I have an autograph? You know, by this time they are famous, thrust into the limelight. And as they leave the church, then the hotel manager also says, we would like to offer you our free honeymoon suite, and gives them all the VIP treatment for their honeymoon. So what a happy ending. So another sort of theme in some of the Ron Howard films I've noticed is the theme of escape. Obviously here, Paula is trying to escape the trappings of this sort of wealthy family and, you know, she's trying to break out on her own. But yeah, people escaping is definitely a theme featured in Ron Howard's movies. Escaping the mundane in search of the extraordinary. Night Shift, the lead character in that, escapes his sort of reclusive life that he has and becomes a better person. Tom Hanks at the end of Splash, all the elderly people at the end of Cocoon escaping their own lives to go on these fantastic adventures. So there's certainly themes that I've noticed that we see in this that recur through the films, the later films of Ron Howard. But, you know, it's the theme of family, again, I've said, is the Ron Howard theme that occurs most in this, I think. And you often see Ron Howard, his character has good family values. You know, there's a scene midway where they pull over again and he's sort of saying, look, I don't want us to get married just because you're doing it to spite your father. I'd rather your parents were on board. So again, he's demonstrating that need for family and family connection. You know, in one of his first, I think it was the first film he directed for Imagine, was Parenthood. And that is one of my favourite Ron Howard films. It's a great ensemble cast, but coming from a family of four brothers, you do notice you are all different. And looking at this family through the parents, you know, the brother and sisters who are now parents, and how their children now are all different, is something I can relate to. And I think it's something that sort of helps bind these Ron Howard films together, the theme of family. So also in this movie, I guess, is the underdog story. And that's another thing that we see a lot of in Howard's films, the underdog. You know, Tom Hanks' character is a bit of an underdog in Splash. The Cinderella Man, you know, by the biography of boxer James J. Braddock, who rises from poverty to become a champion during the Great Depression. Certainly his journey is the underdog trope. The theme of romance is evident in a lot of Howard's movies. A Beautiful Mind, you know, that's where ultimately Nash's character, played by Russell Crowe, finds a lot of his strength in his relationship with his wife. I don't know, sometimes you think, are you clutching at straws, looking at what does resonate? But, you know, is Ron Howard someone who has a style, again, is up for debate. And although he's not a director for hire, he certainly does make films to please the studios rather than to please the artists. You know, he's not an artist as such, but he is a really good technical filmmaker. He knows how to put a good film together, a good story together. And yeah, I think he's one of those directors who's made a real name for himself. He's versatile and he can tackle a wide range of genres whilst maintaining a consistent thematic core, I guess. As I say, this is his first film, but it wasn't the kind of film that he was hoping to have made as his debut. When he voiced his concerns to Roger Corman about producing this sort of film, Corman said, if you make this film good enough, then you shall never have to work for me again. And true to his word, he didn't. So, you know, Grand Theft Auto does serve as a fascinating entry point into Howard's filmography. It offers us a glimpse of the director's potential and hints at the eclectic mix of projects that he would undertake in the years to come. Whilst it's not his most renowned or polished piece of work, you know, it is entertaining. And I guess, a nostalgic relic of a bygone era, celebrating the anarchic spirit of the 70s, the thrill of the open road movies. But throughout the 80s and 90s, Howard continued to solidify his reputation as a versatile director. As I said, he partners with Brian Grazer to create Imagine Entertainment, helming a diverse range of projects. But yeah, through the range of movies that he produced, he's demonstrated a keen ability to connect with audiences on an emotional level, whilst delivering compelling narratives in a whole variety of content. His commitment to his craft and his collaborative spirit have earned him the respect of his peers in Hollywood, and he is known for fostering a supportive and creative working environment on set, allowing actors and crew members to thrive and excel. No one's suggestions are considered unimportant. He's always open to sort of listen to others on the film sets. And, you know, a lot of people have said that they enjoy working for him. I think Russell Crowe, when he went to work for him on A Beautiful Mind, he was known for being a bit of a bad boy at the time. And he said, yeah, I'm going to have to rein it in for this director. He knew that he was going to have to just behave himself. So Ron Howard, he's still kicking about. He's in his 70s now, I think. So not the young child actor that we know. You usually see him now, not with his red hair, but always in his baseball cap and beard. He always looks ill, doesn't he? He looks like he's... His AIDS has kicked in. I don't know, he always looks like he's on his last legs, sort of malnourished. But anyway, I'm rambling. So I guess that's all I've got to say on the subject of Ron Howard and Grand Theft Auto, a director's debut. So yeah, I'm not going to keep waffling on. So if you have enjoyed this, please find us on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. Give us a rating, leave us a review. Really will be appreciated. And yeah, I will try and keep this sort of consistent at the moment. I say this every time I say this, and then I don't make another one for like another 3 months. But there you go. I do love talking about films. I love talking about films to you. And yeah, if you've got any suggestions for films you'd like discussed, then please do email us at wnmovietalk@gmail.com. Or, as I said, find us on Instagram and Facebook, WN Movie Talk Podcast. But for now, thank you all for listening, and I will see you all again soon. Chase!